This week, we're bringing it back to the workplace with some workplace bullying. We'll discuss it after I hit this music. Joining me this week is fantasy horror author A.G. Flitcher. How are you doing today?
I'm good, and you?
I'm doing great. It's a cold, rainy day here in Minnesota. I'm not sure what your weather's like.
No, well, I was just going to say, usually here in British Columbia, it's mostly rain and cloudy days, but today's not so bad.
So, Andre, you worked at a job for quite some time, and then a new boss came along. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah. So, what's so strange about this additional authority figure that we had is that the understanding of hierarchy and overall chain of command felt warped, where we couldn't tell what power this man had, and he tried to essentially increase his power as fast as possible. So this is kind of a bit jumbled in terms of timeline, but when I did my performance review before leaving, he told me that without my consent or knowledge, and this was before he absorbed my department, which was maintenance, he had recorded me on his phone when I was doing a radio call to bring evidence to me when he absorbed the maintenance department to give an example of what he doesn't like in terms of his understanding of good communication within multiple departments. And before I could do a retort, he defended himself saying it wasn't for anything malicious. I was just collecting examples for whenever I have to correct people. I'm like, okay, but you went under the presumption that that I would be under your control, which is so weird and very villainous to me. So I was holding my tongue. I was trying to at least try to be just a, because I knew that I was going to leave eventually.
Yeah.
So I was like, there's no reason for me to pick a fight with this guy. And I know his type. So I know that he doesn't care. He doesn't care about feelings. He'll just do whatever he has to do to make himself powerful. And there were so many things that happened throughout that year. Like, for example, I heard these weird stories from the women there that said that his way, and he did this with me too, this is still connected to me, but with women especially, he would do this dominant thing where he would turn his hand over top of your hand when he shakes her hand, so that when he squeezes it as hard as he can, his hand is on top so that he stays in the dominant position, so that you cower towards him. And there was this one woman who told me that he squeezed her hand so hard that it hurt her for like 2 hours. Like, she couldn't do her job. So that was obviously a male insecurity thing that he was exercising over people. But because of my background in martial arts and having strong hands due to mechanical work and just being a maintenance person for so long, and I have fat hands for 5'4", he couldn't do that to me. He went like this, but because of my practice in wrist manipulation, and I knew what he was doing, I went from here to doing what he did to people, so that he understands I don't tolerate bullying regardless of position of power. So that's how it all started to unfold. And he did this really weird thing with the whole maintenance team. Before he was in our control, or we were in his control, he would park behind our staff room and walk through our staff room as we're like on our coffee break or whatever, like only when we're there. Not like he's like trying to steal stuff, more like he wants to show his presence, that we will get used to the image of intimidation. And then eventually over time, he would try to be extremely nosy with our equipment. So for example, we're with our boss. He doesn't have his own office. He stays with us. We'll hear him like in the hallway where we have all of our cabinets with all our tools, and he's looking through everything. I'm like, what are you doing? That's not your department. You can't take our tools. if you really need them, then ask us. But we're going to say no mostly because we're using those tools every day. So one day he comes in from the other side where like the front entrance door, and he's like, "Hey, can I use some of your tools?" And we say, "No, we're using them today." And he's like, "Is this a financial thing? Is this a why can't I use your tools?" And we're like, "It's not a financial thing. It's a use thing. These are maintenance tools only." And he would give us a stink eye, close the door, and like a dramatic shitty actor, he would look away and then give us the mean stare and then go away.
What was the purpose of him? What was the purpose of him needing your tools?
I think what he was trying to do was just slowly infiltrate all departments so that he can have the say of this all belongs to me. So it's not just an intimidation thing. It's also him subtly saying, it doesn't matter how much you guys complain, all of this will be in my control. So when he absorbed the maintenance apartment, he started changing the entire structure of how we do things, where things go. He started even like including a bunch of cameras everywhere so no one could hide. And this is what really made me feel bullied and uncomfortable. So I was at the back of the zoo, which is the kind of place that I worked at. And when I say the back of the zoo, I'm like against the perimeter fence of the farmers on the other side. Okay. So no one can see me other than whoever is working with me. And I was by myself. And I see from the corner of my eye, like maybe like a 5-minute walk from where I was, my boss talking to him. And he comes up to me, this director of operations. And I'm like, "I'm not talking to you. I know the kind of person you are. You want," because here's the thing about his personality in terms of how he tries to utilize psychology. He waits for you to speak first so that he can catch every nuance and word choice like a politician and use those same words against you to feel inferior and submissive. So that's why I purposely don't look and I don't say anything. I wait for him to make the first move so I could do the reverse to him, because I'm used to being street smart. So I turn around slowly with my tool in my hand, I'm pointing at him, and I'm like, "Yes, how can I help you?" He's like, "So Andre, you were caught speeding off site." And he also specified. He specified how fast I was going and where. So because I thought that was such a weird thing to say, I asked him, "How do you know that? Who reported this?" And he starts laughing very weirdly. And he's like, "A small community of people." So I'm like, "What does that mean? A small community of people? Do you know cops?" Like, anyway, before I sign out for that day, he wrote on the whiteboard that all vehicles that are being used offsite will have a GPS tracker. So literally the day that I was so-called caught speeding, he puts this very like aggressive note of "you're being watched" kind of thing and monitored the whole time. And I was just like, "Why are you going so overkill?" So when I made this complaint to someone, I think it was to the general manager, I guess he got wind of it and he starts pointing the finger at me for my accusatory tone. And says, "Well, Andre, you were the one who came to the company with a report of someone parked down the road of your house that works at the zoo." I'm like, "Yeah, because I felt uncomfortable with someone going out of their way to be close to my property. It's not about me being honest or doing the company a service," which is what he was basically saying. "It's just me feeling uncomfortable. And you're making me feel uncomfortable." So what was so funny about that, the reason why I didn't really fight him on that example, is that it's all he had. It's the only example he had of loyalty to the company. That's how he tried to manipulate people. But overall, what I'm trying to get to here, why so many people quit, is that the people that really enjoy their jobs and were very passionate about it, their overall confidence and ego were so damaged that they're like, well, I don't want to put up with this, especially for what I'm being paid. So bye. And there's actually a bit of an upside to it with this bullying and various forms of intimidation. It made people realize, you know, I have great value. And if it's not being seen here, I'll just go somewhere else. But at the same time, it's still hurtful not to someone like me who was only there to have a steady job and then move on to something else. But for those who want to stay there, who feel like the trust in the family aspect of that company basically was erased in like the blink of an eye. So yeah, that's, and I haven't even gotten to the worst part yet. The worst part was when I gave my 2-week notice for quitting. So first off, I didn't want to deal with him. Didn't want to deal with my boss. I wanted to just do it discreetly without hiding myself so that I don't hurt the company. Because I still appreciate everything that they've provided me. It was just this one caveat that I had to get over. So I emailed the general manager after having received another job and explained why I'm leaving as politely as I could. And then the second that I went back to work, I was in the carpentry shop just looking for stuff, and I can feel him behind me, just watching me. And I was just like, I only have 2 weeks. I don't care. If he wants to watch me or ask me a question, fine. So he's watching me very quietly. He's like, what you doing? I'm like, I'm working. Where are you headed? And I was just so annoyed with him being very nosy. It's not like this. I just pointed in a random direction. And he's like, I'll follow you out. I'm like, I don't want you to follow me out, but fine. I'm just going to ignore you. So he's following me through the carpentry, through the welding area, and then asks me, I got your email. I'm like, I didn't send you an email, but I'm guessing it was passed on to you. And he said, did you not want people knowing you're quitting? And I said, no, it's just there's no such thing as privacy here. And in order for me to get one-on-one with my boss, which I said on purpose to make him understand, you're not my boss. You're just a higher chain of command. I don't answer to you directly. And that's what he always tried to do. Anyway, so he just kind of nodded because he didn't get the nervous reaction that he wanted from me. So he redirected his like festering energy to intimidate someone to someone that was smoking where he wasn't supposed to, even though he wasn't really in violation. But he called it a violation because he has this knee-jerk reaction to feeling to really need to keep his insecurities away from him by downloading them onto others that don't want to be, scrutinized for every little thing that they do.
Why did the company need to hire a director of operations to begin with?
I think essentially what the owner was trying to do with this additional thing is the maintenance department was quite vocal with what we need in terms of expenses, how things should be done, that we can't rush. What we understood is that because the maintenance department over the years had been quite vocal about, let us do our job to the capability that we are with the budget you have given us. You want us to attempt multiple projects at the same time, but you don't have the budget to do every single step of every project, therefore causing you to slow us down by doing one step of each project so nothing gets done. And before this director of operations came, we had basically what's called a quality inspector or / maintenance supervisor that made sure that within the budget and maybe help and have the ability to cut whatever corners we could, help us accomplish projects. So when there was a kerfuffle and he left the company, the owner wanted to increase the speed of production. So he hired this person of authority to basically over time absorb the maintenance department, make sure we're not breaking any rules, that we're not hiding or slacking, and get our stuff done. But what was so contradictory to that agenda is that because he was still mainly focused on the front entrance and maximizing the overall first impression appeal to guests coming in, he tried to get us to do projects for him, which is, you know, nothing related to the animals, which is what our focus has always been. That's what we're paid to do, is to make sure all of the enclosures are safe for the animal, for the guest, and that people understand that this is not a cage. This is a wild, free animal that needs certain necessities and space, and therefore there is constant updating, troubleshooting anything that could be harmful to the animal or guest. So we had to keep explaining that to him, that we have priorities that have to do with the animals, because that's what the company is selling, is the animal, and not amenities. Like that has nothing to do with us. I mean, it makes sense because he doesn't come from a background of animals, so he felt like he had to maximize whatever he understands, whatever's familiar to him and his world, and therefore that's why there was so much riffraff between him and maintenance, because maintenance was like, well, I'm passionate about these animals and you're not. So why were you permitted to absorb our department when we have nothing to do with your world that you understand? So eventually, in the course of like the last 6 months that I was there, I think it was like 15 employees that left from all departments, maybe more.
So the zoo thought maybe the maintenance people weren't getting their work done in time, or I'm starting to wonder if the zoo purposely hired a guy like this because maybe they didn't trust you guys. Because you told them, we don't have the budget to do this, but they want you to get this done anyways.
I don't think it's a trust thing. I think it's just nervousness for increase of cost.
Okay.
So it's not about not trusting the employees. It's about trusting the how fast we were getting things done within their budget and their overall goals for increasing the zoo's income. But the problem with that is that their approach to marketing and the income flow every year was so inconsistent and had nothing to do with us. It just had to do with the logic of the place, you know?
Yeah.
There's only so much you can do privately with a zoo. That's why most zoos in Canada are run by the government of whatever province that's from. I think we were the only privately run zoo. Everything else is municipal. So that's why they have better results of not just traffic flow, but also how things are maintained, because it's also it's slash government slash environmental, you know, approach to things. We're here in BC, it's basically just for the sake of profit.
So the director of operations, he was also in charge of, was he in charge of your boss as well? Did you have like, it was you, your boss, and then him?
This is what I'm trying to say, is he basically took every department under his wing, aside from animal keepers and I think conservation. There's okay. Only two people, because he said, which was hilarious to me, he doesn't want to take on the responsibility of something that he doesn't understand. I'm like, yeah, but we're not just like workaday building workers. We're outdoor maintenance workers that work with animals. That's why before he took our department, the original director of animal care was the one we answered to, because she needed us to focus on the animals.
Yeah, but makes sense.
When they were having their manager meeting, they flipped it to him. And that's why we were so frustrated and so untrusting of this man, because we knew how he thought and what he thought of us.
To me, it sounds like the person who owned the zoo is the real bully, because he purposely hired this guy. I'm really curious what his job description was. Because to me, it sounds like the owner of the zoo wanted you to do work that was beyond your scope of your job description. Mm. And you guys fought back on that. So he hired this prick come in to do his dirty work to get you guys to do it.
The problem with that is that he was advised by the consultant that in Montreal, who was the original general manager, to do things little by little. So even if there is this agenda of gaining power, that you can't just come flying in and make all these crazy changes in one shot and expect everyone to just be like, okay, I will oblige. No, that's not how it works. Because before this guy came, the zoo was treated basically like the property manager's backyard. And we're just his little extended family because he lived on site too. So he, you know, was passionate about this place. But what was so strange to me, even though the people in power weren't in accordance with this agenda, they just obliged.
What I still find interesting is that the guy recorded your conversation without telling you first.
You know what was crazy about that, though? So that was during my performance review. Usually it lasts 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
It lasted an hour and a half. And because of that, my coworker, who was supposed to help in a freezing cold river just off site and get rid of some debris that was increasing the water level, which was making everything flood in the zoo, he ended up slipping several times and throwing his back out and was out of work for a week because I wasn't there to help him. So that means that this man not only did time theft with me, but asked me incessant questions that didn't have anything to do with my performance, causing an employee to injure themselves. I mean, you know, mistakes happen, but I could have helped prevent that mistake.
Yeah, he was trying to get dirt. He was trying to get dirt on you so he can.
Yeah, he asked me some really funny questions.
Well, not just on you, but he wanted to get the idea of what's going on in this zoo with the maintenance department so he can go back after some other people.
He asked me these questions that was like, you can't ask that. Like one was, okay, Andre, if it was between you and this other guy, who would you fire? I was like, what? You can't ask me that. And why would I say me?
Exactly.
And then he would say things like, okay, if everyone else was fired and it was just you, would you be okay with that? I was like, are you saying that I'm such a doormat that you're just going to let everyone go and I'm just going to, yes, okay. So I was trying not to yell. And it was so funny. This is something that I learned over time with my martial arts and just overall understanding people. The people that feel less in control use their hands a lot when they're nervous.
Yeah.
So he was doing that to me the whole time, where I guess I mentioned a long time ago that I did karate and he does jujitsu. So he's like, Andre, you're slow and you did martial arts. So you need to have a quick reaction. And he was actually doing that gesture.
A quick reaction for what?
he means like how I go about my job. And I was just like, fuck yourself. Like, what are you doing? So when he was doing that gesture and he saw that I wasn't blinking and I was laughing in my head because he was doing the same thing with the owner when he was talking to him, because the owner was upset that he wasn't doing his other job, which was to increase the income of the zoo. So apparently he had this really wacky idea of kicking us out from our staff room and our carpentry area and the welding area and turning that into a freaking arcade. I was like, why do you want more electronics in a natural environment?
Exactly.
And also, that's not really going to give you the added income unless you're charging people an entry fee to go into this arcade. And that's what I mean by he was really out of his element, but trying to force it to work for his benefit as opposed to the zoo's benefit. So I was like, you know what? If this director of operations had a strong background in animal care, or at least worked in the zoo as a director of operations, that would make more sense, because then he would understand how to make the animals the highest form of income. That is what you're supposed to be selling. And when I say selling, I don't mean people are paying to see the animal. They're paying for the opportunity to see the animal, because the animal has the option of being out in the middle of the field as opposed to right in your face. You yeah. can't like clap your hands and expect them to be at your door. So yeah, it was just such a mess being there.
Sounds like to me the owner of the zoo was the bully. And he wanted you guys to do more work beyond your scope of practice to save money. And that wasn't your, that's not part of your job. Your job is to take care of the animals and make sure that, you know, their cages are safe, whatever, which is very important, because if something happens where they get out, there's a huge problem there. And it sounds like yeah. he brought in this, he did an interview, found the guy with the, I don't know, who was just a jerk. I don't know the nice way to say it, but purposely hired him and said, hey, I want you to get these guys intimidated or scared enough to do extra work for me. I don't know. It just seems, the guy, the director of operations, was doing his job that he was told to do because the owner made him do it, which I think the owner finally realized wasn't good.
I mean, that makes sense. But the other theory that a coworker and I had, in which we left basically at the same time, and we were the most like seasoned workers. We were both workers that had been there the longest. Our theory was that he was also there to get rid of the strongest minded people, the ones that are the most vocal and honest.
Well, yeah, because they'll say yes and they can do more work that's beyond their scope of practice. That makes sense.
Yeah. So because we weren't willing to work past the dollar that we were making.
It sounds like it was a good decision to leave that place because, you know, it wasn't just a director of operations. It was the zoo itself. It was the owner of the zoo. Andre, you said you're also a writer. Tell us how people can get a hold of you or find your books.
You can find my books on Amazon in Kindle and paperback format. My series, Boon and Jack and Black Rose Cocoon, is what's available.
It also sounds like you could write a horror story about your zoo work.
Yeah. Well, the first horror book I've written is just this one, Black Rose Cocoon. Okay. Which is about a female serial killer, but instead of focusing on her, I focused on the people, because with my experience of working at the zoo and various jobs and listening to people, I focus on the diversity of pain and reaction to events, and how do we, you know, patch ourselves up, whether it's through bullying or heartache, trauma, all that stuff that can, you know, really, you know, test your pure will. That was really what tested me at the Zoom, is seeing my pure will and how much I was willing to put up with.
Yeah, it sounds like that was a great choice. The owners of the zoo was completely being the big bully who hired somebody to do their bullying for them. But Andre, it was great talking to you today and hearing your story. Thank you for sharing it. And I hope you have a great day.
Thank you for listening to me.
And for myself, you can always find us at our very own website, which is www.breakingbullying.com. You can also reach out to us at our email address if you have a story of your own bullying to share, or for whatever reason, you want to get a hold of us. Our email address is breakbullyinghere@gmail.com. Now, if you're a victim of bullying and you don't know where to turn, there is online resources to help you. The first is the government's very own anti-bullying website, and the address is www.stopbullying.gov. And other online resource is www.pacer.org/bullying. Now, if you have had thoughts of suicide or of self-harm, we implore you to stop. Reach out to the National Suicide Hotline. That number is very simple. It's 988. I'm Tim Flynn, and thank you for listening, and we will be back next week to continue the conversation to break the silence on bullying.